AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Locally grown radio is 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. We begin with developing news on immigration policy. The Biden administration is announcing a plan to begin blocking some asylum seekers immediately. Correspondent Steve Dorsey has details from Washington.
The White House wants to quickly expel Cubans, Haitians, and Nicaraguans who enter the U.S. illegally, in addition to efforts to turn away Venezuelans. Instead, the Biden administration will allow 30,000 legal immigrants per month from those four nations. The president is expected to travel to the southern border in Texas this weekend.
The Buffalo Bills say DeMar Hamlin has shown remarkable improvement over the past day after going into cardiac arrest during Monday night's game. A team statement says Hamlin's lungs continue to heal and he appears to be neurologically intact. CBS's Dr. David Agus.
It's not clear exactly what that means, neurologically intact. It could be as simple as when they squeeze his toes and his hands, that they withdraw. So each of those are sensing things versus actually following commands. If they say, move your right foot, and he moves his right foot.
Hamlin is still in critical condition. Northern Californians are getting slammed with heavy rain and damaging winds that have knocked out power to tens of thousands of customers. This man lives in El Granada.
Wires up above were exploding. The transformer and the wires were popping. One of my neighbors yelled down, hey, Scott, go move your truck. And I'm like, I'm not going out there.
At least two people have been killed, including a toddler. More than 70 flights have been canceled at San Francisco International. The House is reconvening on Capitol Hill this hour to try again to elect a new speaker. Kevin McCarthy has been busy offering concessions to hold out Republicans after losing 6 votes in his attempt to lead the new majority. Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries.
It's my hope that today the House Republicans will stop the bickering, stop the backbiting.
Vladimir Putin is calling for a pause on the war for Orthodox Christmas. Correspondent Cammie McCormick.
The ceasefire would begin on January 6th and last for 36 hours. Ukrainian officials have dismissed the proposal as a cynical trap and propaganda. Fighting has been fierce in eastern Ukraine over the last few weeks.
If the Federal Trade Commission wants to get rid of non-compete clauses, that can affect everyone from doctors to sandwich makers. CBS's Linda Kenyon.
Non-competes can prevent workers from leaving a company to work for a competitor or starting a competing business for months or even years. Now, a proposed FTC rule would block companies from imposing non-competes, saying it would promote greater dynamism, innovation, and healthy competition.
Dow down 411. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance, so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
Oil investments involve a high degree of risk and actual results may vary.
Oil and natural gas keep going up as the Russia conflict escalates. Get in on the next major oil boom now and help the U.S. with your patriotic investment that can potentially pay you monthly income for up to 20 or more years. If you're an SEC-accredited investor and have at least $25,000 liquid now, you can take advantage of Encore Energy's projects and a huge tax savings for this year. Call 800-278-7455. That's 800-278-7455.
MyPillow is always looking for ways to solve everyday problems. Introducing a 6-piece towel set that includes 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths. Right now, you can receive a 6-piece set for only $39.98 with promo code SKY. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and have a 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special, and enter promo code SKY. Or call 800-635-1825. That's MyPillow.com, promo code SKY.
Better days are coming. It's called Saturday and Sunday at Jammer's Bar and Grill. On the weekend, kick back with the Jammer's 5 Beer Bucket Special. Any domestic beer you want, mix and match, $10. Jammer's is the best in burgers, sandwiches, and apps. Don't forget Jammer's is the spot for fun, and they have plenty of room for your next party. That's Jammer's Bar and Grill, 2810 Eagle Road, Wisconsin Rapids.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. The Republican primary race for Senator Alberta Darling's seat has dropped to 3 candidates. Former State Senator Randy Hopper of River Hills dropped out of the race less than 2 weeks after announcing his candidacy. He said he didn't want to have his candidacy split the vote and risk allowing a fringe candidate to win the seat. It's possible he's referring to Representative Janelle Brantgen, who has pushed conspiracy theories and has lost the trust of her Republican colleagues. Another candidate, Concordia University student Robert Albrightson, did not turn in his nomination papers by Tuesday's deadline. The primary will be held on February 21st. Gas prices in Wisconsin are going back up. AAA says the statewide average went up 9 cents yesterday to $3.11 a gallon for regular. That's 20 cents higher than it was a week ago. AAA blames temporary refinery shutdowns in late December due to bad weather. Demand for fuel is also on the rise. And that's the news on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Chance for snow this afternoon, otherwise overcast. Highs level off around 32, winds out of the north, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected. Tonight, chance of snow. Lows level off around 15. Highs level off around 23. Tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. About an inch of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 32.
Very fine house with two cats in the yard. Life used to be so hard. Now everything is easy 'cause of you.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Jay Matinere is on the board. Thank you for joining us today during your lunch hour. If you're still sitting at your desk, sitting at home, in your car, join the conversation. 844-967-2789. And I think I see with this story, this is not a Wisconsin story. This is not even an American story. This is a Canadian story.
But it's applicable here.
But it's applicable here. And that's why it caught my eye, because I think as we, you know, with rising interest rates, the housing market has cooled off. And yet we still have, you know, one of the fastest buyers of real estate, and not commercial real estate, residential real estate, including single family homes, is private companies. Not private citizens, but like private equity,
hedge fund companies.
Big companies, Blackstone, you know, and also international companies, international billionaires. And it creates a scenario where there's less supply for the average person who's just trying to buy a house. And it creates more situation where there is, you have more renters than buyers. You have more potential for your landlord to be a company instead of a person. And so your negotiating power when they mistreat you is very different when they are a multi-billion dollar company and you're trying to take them to like tenant court.
Yeah, you're going to lose.
And so this is less about big, what happened in Canada is less about big companies. It's more about foreigners. And so in 2023, Canada is closing its doors to foreign investors who want to purchase homes. So a new Canadian law took effect this week, well, Sunday, January 1st, that essentially bans foreign buyers from buying residential properties as investments for 2 years. So if you are a foreigner who just doesn't have residential status, so it's like if I moved to Canada and I had the intention of becoming a resident, I could still buy property as a individual. So this is not your average immigrant. This is people who, this is companies, this is investors, this is people who are not necessarily trying to make this their home.
But a rent, like a rental property.
Rental properties, vacation homes, investments. And the law was passed because similarly there, as it happened here, there was a spike in home prices that started during the pandemic. And some of their politicians believed that foreign buyers were responsible by snapping up supply, like the supply of homes as investments. So I feel like we saw a very similar thing happen here, where it was a combination of there was very low interest rates. And so people were buying houses, people were moving. I think it's more than just foreign investments. But I do think when you see Wisconsin didn't the brunt of it, but I remember seeing a report for America that Texas, like 35% of the purchase, like the new home purchases in 2019 or 2020 was from private companies.
Really?
Yeah. And that was, I think that was the most egregious state as far as where it was happening the most. But across the country, this is a, you know, real estate's a good investment.
Yeah, it is. But as you said, and this has to be 20 years ago, Kristen, you know, some of the big ski resort areas in Colorado.
Yeah.
There were so many people coming in and buying these luxury vacation skiing getaways that all the people that work at those resorts can't afford to live in these mm-hmm. towns.
Well, think about Hawaii. Hawaii is the most expensive. I think it's the most expensive state to live in, even more than New York as a whole state. And so many of the native Hawaiians can't afford to live there.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, when I was living in New York, these massive luxury apartments would get built, or even condos, and they'd sit empty.
And
they would hold it because they can write it off
right.
as a loss so long as, and they, there's no, there, the pressure, and this happens also with commercial real estate. Think about how many storefronts in Milwaukee and a lot of big cities sit empty because the landlords, they can write it off, and until they get the rent that they want, it's not worth it to lower the price of rent. And so there's a lot of different things here. And so this is an attempt, and I think I could commend them for at least trying something. Now, they're similar to here as well. Their pricing, their housing market has cooled off as they're also increasing interest rates. And so their real estate association, the CREA, expressed concern that this ban could prompt retaliation by the United States and Mexico to prohibit purchases in those countries by Canadians. I don't feel like that's going to happen.
I don't think that that's going to happen either.
But this is an interesting fact. Canadians purchase vacation homes, obviously, just like anyone, people who can afford vacation homes. There's different places that seem ideal to have that. And I think the number one... Americans, where was that? But basically that one of the biggest buyers, foreign buyers in America is Canadians.
Really?
Which kind of surprised me.
They're all going to Florida.
Maybe. Just like Wisconsinites.
Pretty much.
And, but I think it just brings up I've thought for a long time that a vacancy tax on people who own like Main Street storefront properties, because I think it's good for everyone to have bustling Main Streets, mm-hmm. bustling downtowns, and being able to write off that loss. I don't think that helps anyone except the people who own the property.
Well, and you bring up something interesting too. There's a huge reluctance in this country to take on the mess that is our insurance industry, our medical industry, and our tax laws. And yeah. all of the special tricks and things and slips and slides that really wealthy people can do to take advantage of all these loopholes that most of us don't even know exist because they're not applicable.
Speaking of that, I feel like Trump's taxes finally got released without like any fanfare.
Well, there's so much going on in the news.
I know.
And there's a lot of stuff in his taxes.
No, I know. Like, I've seen some reports and kind of bullet points and certain years where he basically paid nothing.
Yeah.
But I just feel like for the this is such a mediocre climax to years of the tax returns, the lawsuits, the I'm not going to do it. Like, everything that culminated in they're finally released. It's available to the public to know. And I feel like basically everyone kind of like wrote an like obligatory article about it. And no one, the conversation online, the conversation of pundits was just kind of like his Mar-a-Lago New Year's Eve party. Yeah. No one really cared.
where no one showed up. No, but you're not wrong. I mean, there were some things learned from the release of his taxes. He had a bank account in China. While he was in office.
While he was raging against China?
Yes.
China.
He not only didn't pay taxes for a number of years, you know, he also promised he would donate all of his salary, his presidential salary, and he didn't do that in 2020. In fact, the Trumps made no, zero, zippo charitable contributions in 2020. Nothing. Not even
like
50 bucks.
You mean when you say Trump's plural?
I mean Donald and Melania Trump.
Okay.
They gave no money to charity in 2020. Not even 50 bucks to the local animal shelter.
Well, at least they didn't write it down. But they probably would if they did.
Yes.
Anyways, that was a tangent. Yeah. But I think it's less, for me in our country, I think it's less about, and it's one thing if you're the developer, if you're a big company and you're developing a subdivision, if you're developing a luxury condo building or and the investment of building the thing and getting the zoning laws, but like gobbling up single family homes, I don't think that's a good thing. And I think it's just another contribution, like contributor to wealth inequality and the average person and how much harder it makes to make that first leap into home ownership, which mm-hmm. is still to this day the number one thing you can do for upward mobility.
Yes. To acquire wealth.
To acquire
if you don't come from it.
Yes. And you know, and even with the high interest rates, that alone, someone said like spelled this out as far as the same house that costs the same no matter what, just because of the interest rates, went from having to like pay a mortgage that would be equivalent to a house that is like $330,000. But because of the interest rates, you're now paying a mortgage that's basically $700,000.
Wow.
Because of how that bakes into what your monthly payments are, even sure. though the value of the house is the same. And like that happened in a year of how much that changed. And so making things a little bit more realistic, in my view, for more people to buy a home, because to a certain extent, especially as we wrap in homelessness and all these other things, like I certainly do fall on the side of it is good for society to have people be housed.
And preferably be their own homeowners.
Yes.
It's you invest, then there's more investment in that property. There's more ownership.
It's like what we talked about with Brett from Habitat for Humanity Waukesha.
Yes.
Of the ownership of, I bought this, even more of the ownership of, I helped build this.
Yes.
And I just think it helps our communities and our states.
And our neighborhoods.
And our neighborhoods in general. If it's the people who own them don't live somewhere else and don't really give a crap about how the neighborhood's going.
Right.
Or how the community is faring. And they just want to make sure rent is due and it's paid on time.
Well, because like in the good old days when a company located in a community, the executives at that company lived in that community.
Absolutely. All right. Well, when we come back, there is a historical thing. I don't know even exactly how to call it. There's something going around the internet that I wanted to read because it gives some pretty good perspective. So come back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin. La, 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 la. Our house is a very, very, very fine house. Fine house with two cats in the yard. Life used to be so hard. Now everything is easy because of
together, we can turn a stairwell into an ER at a moment's notice. Together, we can turn a rescue ship for refugees into a maternity ward. Together, we can vaccinate 710,000 people in just 11 days. Together, we can deliver medical care where the need is greatest. Together, we are Doctors Without Borders. Doctors Without Borders goes where others don't to provide life-saving medical care to people caught in crisis situations around the world. Learn more at doctorswithoutborders.org.
This message is for Karina, our mom who finished her high school diploma at age 28. Hi, Mom. It's Amethyst and Nicholas.
Congratulations on getting your diploma.
You worked so hard and have taught us so much.
We love you.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
From Lake Wazeecha and beyond, your news, talk, and sports is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio, streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are here in the noon hour. Thank you for joining us. Jane Matinere is on the board. Now, I put this in our outline. Did you read it yet?
No.
Okay. So you'll have a honest reaction.
Fresh take.
To when I read it. But this came from a Instagram account called Inside History, which is exactly what it sounds like. It posts historical pictures and different stories that you might not have known, but this was, when did they post this? 5 days ago. So like the new year. And I think it struck a chord with me, one, because it's true and it's insane perspective. But I think as a millennial, we have had this kind of timeline as adults spelled out for us, right? Like we entered, for many of us, I was in high school when 9/11 happened, which I think for some modern historians would say that was a big turning point as far as the 90s were kind of the end of a golden era, and things so far in the 21st century has been bleaker.
Challenging.
And, you know, we entered high school or entered adolescence and it was 9/11. By the time some of us were graduating college, it was the first recession, and it was recovery from that. And then the pandemic and just like the amount of and like the rise of school shootings and there's a lot of different things. But this is for people who were born in 1900. So I'm going to read it and then Jane, you can give me your honest reaction.
All right.
For a small amount of perspective at this moment, imagine you were born in 1900. When you were 14, World War I starts and ends on your 18th birthday with 22 million people killed. Later in the year, a Spanish flu epidemic hits the planet and runs until you are about 20. 50 million people die from it in those 2 years. 50 million.
Yeah.
When you're 29, the Great Depression begins. Unemployment hits 25%. Global GDP drops to 27%. That runs until you're 33. The country nearly collapses along with the world economy. When you turn 39, World War II starts. You aren't even over the hill yet. When you're 41, the United States is fully pulled into World War II. Between your 39th and 45th birthday, 75 million people perish in the war, and the Holocaust kills 12 million. At 52, the Korean War starts, and 5 million people perish. At 64, the Vietnam War begins, and it doesn't end for many years. 4 million people die in that conflict. Approaching your 62nd birthday, you have the Cuban Missile Crisis, a tipping point in the Cold War. Life on our planet, as we know it, could well have ended. Great leaders prevented that from happening. As you turn 75, the Vietnam War finally ends. Think of everyone on the planet born in 1900. How do you survive all of that? A kid in 1985 didn't think their 85-year-old grandparents understood how hard school was. Yet those grandparents and now great-grandparents survived through everything listed above. Perspective is an amazing art. As 2022 ends, let's try and keep things in perspective. Let's be smart, help each other out, and we will get through all of this. In the history of the world, there has never been a storm that lasted. This too shall pass.
Wow.
And it's, you know, and I say that as far as like, you know, there has been like in my age of thinking.
This is the worst time in history,
right? The worst time in history, because obviously, and I sometimes think about that. Of like, every time I watch a documentary about the 60s and how wild the political scene, you know, how many leaders were getting assassinated and the DNC in Chicago and how crazy things felt probably then. And we got through that. But it was an interesting, and you know, some people, some of the comments, because now this has been posted. I saw this originally on the account that posted it. Comedian Neil Brennan shared it, and there was a lot of good dialogue that happened there because, you know, all of that happened because most of the events listed out were world events, and largely we were lucky enough to live here. Not we. Americans
yes.
had a very different experience of those world events
yes.
than the Soviet Union.
Or Europe.
Or China. And some of the places and the storylines that I think we don't necessarily get taught in our history classes about World War II before America got pulled into it. And I just thought, I was saving that because for some time this week, because I thought it was very well written and also a good reminder that we get through things, and as long as the world continues to be habitable, well, we will find a way.
There's that. I saw something interesting going back to 1900 about what the conditions were like in the U.S. in the 1900s. So if you were born in 1900, I believe this is accurate, your life expectancy was 47 years old.
Wow.
We still had child labor. There were no unions. There were, I mean, it was a significantly different world.
Well, and that's the first, if you look this up on Instagram, again, it's from the account Inside History. There's multiple photos that they posted with the caption. And the first one is of children who are clearly malnourished and starving. But, and then there's another picture of little girls who are covered in soot that clearly were working.
Yeah. Working and in the coal mines.
Here's one from the During the Depression. A guy wearing a little sandwich board. I know three trades. I speak three languages. Fought for 3 years. Have three children. And no work for 3 months. But I only want one job. So yeah. It's, look it out. Look it up. If you have Instagram, it's a worth
little perspective.
A little perspective for your Thursday afternoon. All right. Well, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk about cash incentives. How much would it take you to get paid to move? Let us know. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest radio station ever. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Pride.
Left corner, three in the way. Got it.
Excellence.
Yes, it counts. And a foul.
Commitment.
Drops the hammer. Thank you and good night.
For Badgers, they're not just words. They're words to live by.
It's over. Let's have a party, Badger Nation.
This is your radio home for the Badgers.
Catch all the Badgers men's basketball action in the Big Ten this year right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
Here's to Wisconsin winter traditions, celebrated year after year.
Check this out.
To lighting up a frosty night with fireworks at Fish Creek Winterfest. Here's to cheering 8,000 skiers across the finish line at the American Berkey Biner in Hayward. And to snow sculpting magic at Winterfest in Lake Geneva. Plan your winter getaway at TravelWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
Burgers stacked with mushrooms on Wisconsin Swiss cheese, or piled high with smoked brisket, crispy bacon, Wisconsin Gouda, lettuce, tomato, sweet barbecue sauce, and a fried pickle, or simply topped with cheese and fried onions, Monk's Bar and Grill offers classic and gourmet burgers for lunch, dinner, and game day. Whatever you are craving, Monk's has you covered with 7 locations statewide. Monk's Bar and Grill is ready for your next game day visit and is a proud partner of Wisconsin Athletics.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director James and head of production Seth will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's artists supporting artists, in their own words.
I'm Naheem Hines, running back for the Indianapolis Colts and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. Mail theft is a growing problem in Wisconsin and across the country. Last week, Wauwatosa police found bags of stolen mail inside a vehicle that crashed during a police chase. WISN News spoke with the national president of the Postal Police Officers Union, Frank Albergo, who says mail theft is spreading like wildfire and the Postal Inspection Service isn't doing much to fight it. Thieves get a hold of stolen letter carrier master keys, which can be used to open any box in the zip code, including inside apartment buildings. Thieves are especially looking for checks, which are sold online or washed, to commit bank fraud. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services is urging residents to test their homes and buildings for radon. Exposure to radon gas is the second leading cause of lung cancer. It causes more lung cancer among non-smokers than secondhand tobacco smoke. Over 900 people die in Wisconsin each year from lung cancer due to radon exposure. Easy-to-use test kits are widely available. And that's the news on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Chance for snow this afternoon, otherwise overcast. Highs level off around 32, winds out of the north, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight, chance of snow, lows level off around 15, highs level off around 23, tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. About an inch of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 32.
I've heard enough Coasties say, you couldn't pay me to move to the Midwest. But what would they say if someone was actually trying to pay them? And now that is happening more often, not necessarily in Wisconsin, but in the Midwest. There are more and more programs popping up as states and localities are fighting to gain population. They are literally paying people to move to their cities. And Mark Sommerhauser has taken it upon himself to look into some of these programs. And in his new report for Wisconsin Policy Forum, worker incentives gaining popularity in the Midwest, but still rare in Wisconsin. Welcome. We've talked a lot. This is your first time on the show, though, Mark.
I know. I'm excited to be with you. Like you said, we've spoken
You know, previously, this is the first time I've actually been on.
Yes. And so you were both a communications director and a policy researcher over at Wisconsin Policy Forum. So I guess before we jump into what you found, what interested you about this topic? Because it's a topic that fascinates me as far as what, as someone who moved from the Midwest, who moved out and moved back, how do we get more people to move here and the different policies that could help that? And so what interested you in looking into this specific, like, incentive programs that are popping up?
Yeah. So we had been aware that some communities nationally were starting to adopt these programs, even pre-pandemic, and then especially during the pandemic, it seemed to really accelerate. And we can talk about it in a little bit, but in particular, the program that they have in Tulsa, Oklahoma, has just gotten a ton of press. I mean, you can Google it really quickly and find a lot of national media that's covered it. We also were aware that there had been some sort of preliminary discussions within the city of Milwaukee about the possibility of Milwaukee looking at some incentive like this. That hasn't really progressed that we're aware of, but it was just something that was being talked about in Milwaukee. So that was another thing that kind of put it on our radar. And then I think the final thing that kind of cemented it was when we kind of looked into it and found that there were, you know, a couple of smaller communities that had already adopted these incentives were like, okay, there really seems to be something here that's worth taking a look at, because this is something, again, that a few Wisconsin communities have picked up, not a lot, especially compared to other Midwest states. But, you know, it just seems like all the factors that have caused other states to adopt these programs, those are going to continue to be in place here in Wisconsin in future years.
So, I think for the report said there's around 70 that you guys looked into, or at least you are aware of.
And those are just, the ones that we could find, I should note. I mean, we're not saying that's like a complete authoritative list. We did have a couple tools that we used, including this website, makemymove.com, which has become sort of like an online marketplace, essentially, for somebody who's especially has a remote job and is open to relocating. You can literally go to this website and pick like a region of the country.
Oh, wow.
Pick your dollar amount for the incentive that you want. It's like a very interesting tool that they've developed. And it was a great reference for us to be able to actually try to add up how many of these programs are out there. Again, I'm sure there are programs that we couldn't find that have cropped up, especially very recently. But we feel like this is a good, you know, kind of starting point for people to start to get a handle on how many communities are doing this.
And so what do the incentives look like? Was there a huge variation, or like, is it always cash, or what are kind of the different variations of cash, the programs?
Yeah. So cash is the most common incentive, but it's definitely not the only one. Another common one that we see is assistance, for instance, making a down payment with a home, the purchase of a home. Some, especially smaller, more rural communities, were offering people free land, free lot to build a home on. So those are probably some of the most common ones. Cash is definitely the most common. A lot of other, a lot of communities that offer cash also will offer additional perks. I think the cash is clearly the piece of the incentive package that has the most financial value, but like a lot of these other ones would throw in like free co-working space or other little perks like that as well.
And where does the money come from? Is it through taxes? Is it grants from private foundations?
That really varies. Yeah. I mean, and so I'll just take the example of Tulsa, because again, it's the program that's gotten the most
attention. Yeah, let's talk more about that one, just because it has had the most attention and potentially been the most successful.
I think it's clearly one of the most successful. You know, they are touting that they have successfully had more than 2,000 people participate in the program and relocate to the Tulsa area. Now, Tulsa is bigger than most of the communities that we looked at that offer these incentives. It is a metro area of more than 1 million people. So, you know, 2,000 people within the context of that large of a metro area, not a huge amount, but certainly, you know, you can't say that the program has not been successful. I don't think if it's engaged more than 2,000 people to relocate. They were able to get a philanthropic foundation in the Tulsa area to actually put up the money for these incentives. So that's one example, and there are a few others that we found like that, where it was not actually taxpayer dollars that were being used. So that obviously probably in the minds of some people makes it a bit less contentious, a bit less of a political football, so to speak, if it's not tax dollars that are going toward the program. But certainly other communities are using public funds to offer these incentives.
Because when we say Milwaukee thought about it, I was like, with what money? Because it's not like Milwaukee has a ton of extra cash right now to be throwing at people to move here.
I'm Although sure we that need would be people. Part of the discussion.
Yeah. Yes. And so there's only two in Wisconsin. There's Fond du Lac and Merrill.
City of Merrill. And Merrill's is a little different. Well, actually, both the Wisconsin ones are a little bit unique compared to the other ones that we found nationally. Merrill's is unique because it's not strictly a relocation incentive. It's actually something that's open to current residents of the city, as well as somebody that would be willing to move in. And so that one, that element of Merrill's program is a little different. They are offering incentives of $10,000 for somebody to either, again, a current or somebody from outside the city to build a new home within the city of Merrill. So that one's kind of unique. We really didn't find another one like that anywhere else. And then the other one that we found is in Fond du Lac County. And their program is really quite different than any that we found nationally. Theirs is not so much aimed at remote workers. They are looking to entice people to work for employers within Fond du Lac County, brick and mortar employers mm-hmm. that are located within the county. And their program is unique because they are leveraging dollars from the actual private employers. So the way they do it is the county puts up 50% of the incentive funding, and the business that this person agrees to work for, to relocate to Fond du Lac County and work for, puts up the other half of the funding, which is, we thought, was kind of an intriguing model. And again, was different than anything else that we found nationally. But again, so that's a little different. You know, this is not about getting remote workers to Fond du Lac County. It's about getting people to actually come in and work for brick and mortar employers. If you go to the website, either for Fond du Lac County or for their economic development agency that's really closely involved with this program, they talk about how so many of the employers in that county were really struggling to find enough workers to fill all the job vacancies that they had. And that was kind of where the impetus for that program arose, was actually being willing to offer people financial incentives. And the incentive in Fond du Lac County is tied for the largest action that we found anywhere, $15,000.
Oh, wow.
Half of that, again, coming from public funds, half of it coming from the employer. And it's a very new program, literally just began a few months ago. So, when we spoke to the county in November, they indicated that they had so far had 15 workers sign up. So it's, you know, certainly I think a little early to really gauge the effectiveness of a program that's only about 3 months old right now. But
yeah. We're talking to Mark Sommerhauser, who is the communications director and policy researcher at Wisconsin Policy Forum, about the rise or the increasing trend of cash incentives to get people to move to a certain place. And one of the things you just pointed out about the Fond du Lac program that I think is interesting is the difference between trying to tap into the surge of more and more remote workers, so people who can work anywhere. So I know when I wasn't living in San Francisco at the time, but during the pandemic, the amount of people who left New York and San Francisco, because all of a sudden they're like, oh, I can make this kind of money, but live anywhere. I don't have to pay these rents. Thank you. Yes, I will do that. I don't know how many people have...
In the Bay Area, New York, especially.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, so yeah. I don't know how many people have moved back because they just are city people and they like those areas. But the difference being in Wisconsin, as we have a worker shortage, to just try to attract more remote workers who are living here but working somewhere else doesn't help solve that problem. And so it's interesting to think about the Fond du Lac program being as much about population as it is about like a jobs program.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's right. And, we really found in taking a national view of these programs that they were really concentrated in the Midwest. More than half, 43, I think, of the 71 programs that we found were in Midwestern states. And listen, it's no coincidence that, you know, some of the demographic challenges that you're seeing in Midwestern states, that's also where these programs, I think, are cropping up.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these communities maybe have not seen a lot of population growth. Maybe they've seen population decline. And so they're really willing to think in more novel ways about how do we get new fresh blood here? How do we get people to move to our community?
And I'm sorry if this is a curveball and it's, if you don't know the answer, but I'm just curious because on the list of places that are growing the fastest, states that are growing the fastest, there's some that make sense to me. Florida, it's warm. There's no income tax. Arizona, it's warm. Why is North Dakota one of the, because I look at this map that you guys have in your, in the report of all the little, the dots that show where these programs exist. There's one that looks on the border between Minneapolis and North Dakota, but to have North Dakota be one of the fastest growing, and it's, if it's per capita, maybe it's not that many people because it's not like there's a ton of people in North Dakota, but do you know anything about what they're doing as far as why more and more people are moving there?
Why their population is growing? So the one thing that I know about North Dakota is they have had a massive boom in the western part of their state in oil and natural gas extraction, which has created a ton of actually really good paying jobs.
Got it.
In western North Dakota, which, as you can imagine, you know, is not a super populated part of the country normally. I think that has made a big difference there. And as you said, it's such a thinly populated state. It's such a low population state that a relatively small number of people moving in make a big proportional difference, especially in the western part of the state. So
I think it's something similar with Alaska, too. Like Barrows, Alaska, I think, has more and more jobs popping up. But again, like, you got to live in Alaska.
Well, and there goes my plan for us to target people in North Dakota, because at least our weather isn't as bad as theirs.
Right.
So I guess, because we have to go to a break soon, but there's some more questions I want to ask afterwards as more other policies as far as solving this problem. But what trends did you find? Is there like a magic number, or what were kind of the things that where it seems like it's working? And granted, I know that a lot of the programs are new that it's hard to have any strong conclusions. But were there anything that you saw that kind of indicated this would be successful, or what the threshold had to be?
So that's a great question, because I think it's really important when you're doing these kind of programs to actually be evaluating their effectiveness. How well are they working? The one piece of data that we really wanted to find that we were not able to find was, you know, for each of these communities, how many workers are they actually successfully relocating? Now, a few of the big success stories like Tulsa are voluntarily sharing this info and kind of trumpeting it. You know, I suspect that the communities that have not been as successful are not going to be as vocal about sharing that information. I would love to know more about that. I think it sort of stands to reason that, because we saw communities offering financial incentives of anywhere between $1,000 and $15,000, and at all points in between there. $5,000 was a common number that we saw. There are some communities at the $10,000 level. Which is where the Tulsa program, for instance, is $10,000.
Mark, I got it.
You know,
for a teaser, got to cut you off because we got to go to commercial. So we'll finish answering that question when we come back. And also potentially other things you guys might investigate that could help get people to move here. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Why can't I not move this figure? If no one scoops my next paper, we're up all night to get data. We're up all night to get data.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life and a brighter future. Children International and friends like you are giving these children a chance to achieve their dreams by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and more, so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
I'm Tumani. When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things. I committed some crimes, and even got shot, but I'm not a criminal.
That's right. I'm Jamal. I work for Youth Advocate Programs. Yeah, I was Tumani's advocate.
helping him stay out of jail, stay in the neighborhood, get a job, and work hard to see a better future for himself. If you have a change of mindset, you can have a change of action.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
No, she's a good student and a great kid. As Jalen's YAP advocate, I'm always here for her. With the Youth Advocate programs, I was able to connect with Jalen.
YAP is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. After completing our program, 86% of participants were arrest-free. YAP works.
And now, I'm a YAP advocate, helping kids like me find a better way.
Youth Advocate Programs. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn how at yapinc.org.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. We are talking to Mark Sommerhauser, who is the communications director and a policy researcher for Wisconsin Policy Forum, about the new programs across mostly the Midwest that are incentivizing people to move there by giving them money. And before I had to cut you off for a commercial, we were talking about what conclusions you were able to find in this report, if any, knowing that a lot of these programs are new, but kind of what were the patterns or threshold that you found as far as if people wanted to replicate it to actually make this work?
Yeah, no, that's and I think, you know, kind of what I was saying is the amounts of the incentives really vary anywhere between $1,000 and $15,000. Again, we weren't able to find data, unfortunately, on all these communities, how many people are actually relocating there. To us, it just sort of stood to reason that, you know, obviously a larger dollar amount is going to probably be more effective in terms of getting people to move. I think if you just surveyed people and asked them how much would it take to get you to uproot your life, most people are going to say more than $1,000.
Yeah.
$10,000 might do it for some people, maybe. And obviously, of course, it depends on where they're moving to. You know, some of the smaller communities that we saw tended to be offering smaller amounts. It seems like there did seem to be some correlation. Some of the larger communities were able to offer a little more, a little larger incentive. But I wouldn't say there's a magic number, but more of a continuum, really.
Yeah. What were some of the cons or the negative aspects that you found as why these programs are not necessarily a good idea?
Sure. Well, I think obviously the first piece is for those programs that are publicly funded, it's going to create a very robust discussion. As you mentioned, in the city of Milwaukee is a good example. We know that the city of Milwaukee has a ton of budgetary challenges. And so and they're not alone in that. There are a lot of other communities across the country, particularly in Midwestern states, that have budget challenges. And if you're looking at a scenario where, you know, you have to have those dollars compete with just funding for other essential services that the city provides, that can be really controversial. Less of an issue probably for some of the communities like Tulsa that have been able to get, you know, philanthropic foundations and things to be able to bankroll these programs. So that's one thing that can be a con, or at least controversial. You know, of course, the particularly for the programs that are aimed at attracting remote workers, which appears to be the bulk of the programs that we found, there's always going to be some controversy, I think. Well, number one, there's always some controversy whenever you create some sort of an incentive or some sort of a cash payment that only is benefiting a small number of people. That's especially if it's publicly funded, paid for by everybody else. But then also, I think there's some questions around fairness and equity, in the sense that you know, remote workers tend to be fairly well paid.
Yeah.
They're, you know what I'm saying? They're people who already probably in most cases have you know, professional white collar jobs where they're not necessarily struggling financially, and then you're giving them whatever $10,000 or whatever on top of that. Now, it can obviously be argued that there are a ton of economic benefits to having people with good paying jobs, more of those people in your community, they're going to pay more taxes. They're going to shop and spend their money in ways that are going to benefit the local economy. But it's always going to, I think, be controversial. And some people are probably going to have a difficult time stomaching giving large amounts of money to people, in that position, as opposed to maybe people in a position of greater financial need. So, you know, those are a few things that crop up that just come to mind right off the top of my head.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. The forum puts out what, 1 to 2 reports a month? You guys do a lot over there.
We're lucky. We have a lot of staffers that are always working hard to try to get research out. We're typically actually in the range of about 1 a week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So we try to cover a lot of ground, and we do research on workforce and economic development issues, but we also do a lot of stuff around state and local government, finance and budgets, as well as education is another area that is really an area of focus for us in our research.
So looking at 2023, are there plans to look at other potential policies and the pros and cons of when it comes to getting population and getting people to move to Wisconsin?
Yeah. So we actually have a report that's probably going to be out later this month, either later this month or next, that's pretty specific. We did have a foundation that approached us and is helping to fund this report, but it's one that looks at actually a very specific element of the workforce, which is construction workers and the construction workforce in Southeast Wisconsin, because there's not enough construction workers in Southeast Wisconsin. And our research being spearheaded by my colleague, Joe Pietrangelo, is going to look at kind of why that is, how our worker issues in construction kind of compare with other metro areas, other communities, other states, as well as some potential solutions, some things that we might be able to do about that. So that's one that's, I would say, even kind of unusually specific for the types of reports that we do. But I would anticipate, I don't see anything else further out, but economic development and workforce issues is something that is kind of a staple issue for us. It's something we do a fair amount of research on. And so I would anticipate probably later in 2023, you might see more from us on that front.
Yeah, because I probably will have to talk to you offline about getting someone to talk about the pros and cons of a flat income tax, since that seems to be talked about a lot right now. And who would that benefit? Right. And would that actually attract people to move here? Some people say yes, but we don't have enough time to talk about that today. So, Mark Sommerhauser, thank you so much for joining us today. I think this is really interesting. We will link this, your report, to our podcast show notes for today. Thank you so much for joining us. It was good to finally get you on the show.
Yeah, this was a ton of fun, Kristen. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we'll get you back on soon. And for us, I think this is super interesting. If you have thoughts or comments on what would get you to move in out of a state to a different part of the state, 844-967-2789. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, Dr. Mike will be here to fix your life and your lineup. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
As you go about your daily life, look closer. As you gather with family and friends, look closer. Right in your community, there are youth who don't have the home, warmth, and healing you have. So, look closer.
Every year across America, a staggering 4.2 million youth are homeless or trafficked. Covenant House is the national leader providing safe housing for youth 50 years strong. Tonight, 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed. And tomorrow, they will wake up surrounded by love. Every youth who walks into Covenant House gets clean clothes, hot meals, medical care, and a safe place to sleep 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in sites across America to help them fulfill the great promise of their lives. So, look closer at Covenant House and help us fight youth homelessness. To help or get help, go to
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM, and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
News, talk, and sports